I have to talk to you, beloved ones of God, who have heard the call of the message and whose hearts are so strongly attuned to the bringer of the message of today. We have heard a very interesting sermon referring in particular to what happened 100 years ago, technology, and what will happen in the future. Is my voice loud enough?
Yes.
Our master was of a period of 100 years ago. And yet, you cannot imagine how modern he was in some ways. He was one of the very few in the city of Suren who had a driving license and had a car, and he did drive the car, and that car was one of the only, perhaps two or three, in the city. We're talking about 100 years ago. And it was modern in those days. It was modern technology. A car. And you know where he got it from? Anybody knows? Has anybody taken the trouble to read a book called Once Upon a Time,
yes,
in which there's a picture of that car? You know, always asking, how can we attune ourselves to the Master? The strongest way to attune to the Master, the human way, is by recording memories. Now, to this effect, we have the great privilege of having among us not only the Dutch people, who we love. Holland is the country that I like the best. But we have people from other countries in Europe here among us, and some who have come from so many miles away, America. But then, you know, I'm talking about memories. Among us, there is one that not all of you know. Does anybody know who I'm talking about? There's one here among us whose father was a murid of our master. What a precious memory! A murid, the only murid of Hazrat Anas Khan who is here among us, and who took the trouble to come from South Africa. It's not so easy. It's not so near. His name is Waldo van Essen. Where is he? Stand up. The son of a murid of Hazrat Anas Khan. Now, the reason why I'm particularly talking about him is, again, an ego trip, because his father was 20 years old when I was a boy, was the only Sufi who played with us. All the Sufis were all grown up, serious people, and they didn't want to have anything to do with these stupid, naughty children. But his father understood, and he played with us. He was the only Sufi who played with us. So you imagine how much I love him. These are memories. As to technology, coming back to the sermon of this morning, which I hope everybody really understood, which I'm not sure about, because it did have a touch of of technology. Hazrat Inayat Khan, as I said, had his driving license and could drive a car. And of course, some of the Murids said to him, "You can't do that, Murshid, you can't do that." You know, in Dutch, that doet me niet. In America, he was one of the first tourists whom who took a tour in an airplane, a small airplane, which was only for just to fly over cities, just to encourage people, tourism. He did it. There's a picture of Hazrat Inayat Khan standing in front of the airplane. Has anybody seen it? Our father, because now I'm mentioning my father, told the children over and over again, because of course we were always questioning, what is this universal worship, what is it all? You know, it looks funny for children. So we used to ask, but what religion do we belong to? There are so many religions on that table. And our father said, "I will never educate you in any religion. I'll leave it up to you to decide later. But you must try to look into the different scriptures. But not to take a decision and not to be influenced by anybody." And that is perhaps one of the reasons why I am so very democratic, which some people do not understand. Hazrat Inayat Khan was much more democratic than any of you believe. So this gives me to tell you that at some moments he was just a normal friend like anybody else. You know, he stepped into the tram. And, of course, as soon as he came into the tram, people just stood up. They didn't know why. They said, "Oh, attention, c'est le roi." But they didn't know what country. I mean, he was not embarrassed to experience very simple situations like the tram. And although he was not embarrassed to experience those situations, the people just couldn't understand what this image is really representing. They felt something, but they couldn't understand. They couldn't give an explanation. But he did not pretend. And that's the point I want to make, as I want to shout it out. Our master never pretended anything. He never pretended to be spiritual. He never pretended to be a master. And that is why, for some, he was just a friend, a simple friend. For others, he was a father. For others, he was a teacher, a guide. For some others, he was a very famous philosopher. And for some very few who did not understand, he was bringing a message. And what is that message? As he said himself, there is only one message, which has always been and shall always be, but has come at different periods of humanity in different languages, different ways of spreading the truth. Now, of course, for some, which I think many people understand, the word claim must go out of the dictionary, the Sufi dictionary. Just like Napoleon took out the word impossible out of the French dictionary. And we should take out the word pretense. And the word claim. Because pretense is claim. Truth does not need to be proven, neither by claim, nor appearance, nor theory and dogmatic limitations of truth. In our work, spreading the message, or let's put it this way, the new impulse of the message which has always been, it can only be successful if we are constantly attuned to our master. Hazrat Nahar Khan has brought volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes of teachings, and none of us can claim having read them all, understood them all, and certainly none of us have put all those teachings into practice. None of us. Even the ones who are screaming here. So we do not need more teachings. We don't need anybody to give us more teachings. Our master has given everything. What we need is to study those teachings. And perhaps an advice, if each day we would pick out of the books one sentence and try to make a reality out of that sentence, perhaps it would help a little bit in our work. And the best way, there's only one way to know whether we are doing right or wrong, is to picture our master in front of us and to ask, oh, am I doing the way you wanted me to do it? Am I really spreading the message in the way that you had entrusted to us? There is a book, there is a saying in somewhere where our master says, I have entrusted the work in your hands. But in order to make sure that we are doing it correctly, imagine the master there. Oh, master, am I really doing it the way you meant it to be done? Or am I doing it according to my own ego? We all have an ego, all of us, a big ego. But we have a loving heart. And if we can find a balance between the ego and the loving heart, perhaps we might discover that there is, that we can be in harmony with ourselves. And we can only be in harmony with ourselves, I mean with others, if we are in harmony with ourselves. So, before judging others, before teaching others, before kicking others, start kicking ourselves. Start teaching ourselves. Perhaps we shall be a little bit closer to the love of our master. Talking about technology again, so many years ago, perhaps 100 years ago, I don't know exactly, there was such a thing as radio. And again, unfortunately, our father never experienced radio. There was no radio in his time. I mean, there was. It just started, but it had not yet reached Fazal Manzil. In a message which Hazrat Nahat Khan gave over the radio, which was an historical event, first of all, from a technology point of view, secondly, the tremendous democratic message which he gave in a world which in those days did not know what democracy really meant. He said the following. These are the real words of our master, and anybody who doubts it, be careful of your doubting, because we shall hear the voice of our master saying these same words, so don't doubt them, you will hear them. The reason why I'm reading it is because the recording is not very clear, and some words are really difficult to understand from the recording. It's 100 years ago, so it could not be better. So here, technology again, a message that was given 100 years ago by Hazrat Nahat Khan is now, 100 years afterwards, being read by his own son. Do you realize that? And don't forget that in 3 years I will also be 100 years old. The Sufi message given today to humanity is not a message of the East. It's not. So how can we say, Sufism is a message of the East? In our time says it's not. Have you all heard? You will hear our master saying those same words. It is a message of the soul. That's what it is. The word Sufi means wisdom, which comes from the root Sufia. This message of wisdom is given today, 100 years ago, so that people may come together. That's what we are doing here. In a better understanding, arising beyond the different sections of religions, beyond religions, beyond castes, beyond creeds, which divide mankind. You will hear our master saying, emphasizing, which divide mankind. You will hear it. The Sufi message is an answer to the cry of humanity. In our time, that was 100 years ago, where materialism and pervading it is all pervading, and commercialism is continually on the increase. We heard it this morning. The Sufi message respects all religions, recognizes all scriptures, regards all prophets held in esteem by large sections of humanity. The Sufi message is the source and goal of all wisdom in one. Today, we are celebrating the birth of our master. It is a happy day because so many, at least for many, who have whose lives have been successful and happy with the help of that message, which has helped them in their family life, in their religious problems, social problems, and personal problems. This message has been a great blessing to so many who have approached it or been approached by it, and especially to those who have worked for it. And It is our privilege, but more than a privilege, it is our duty to make sure that every word said is constructive and not destructive. And if we have pronounced words which are destructive, we should be ashamed. Our Sufi movement has a great ideal, which is love, harmony, and beauty. And we do not always ask ourselves, am I really acting according to love? Am I? What I am doing, is it beautiful? And what is more, am I in harmony with myself? Am I in harmony with others? None of us can say, yes, it is so. All of us have been untrue and are constantly untrue, me included, to those ideals. So it is our duty to keep those ideals in front of us, together with the picture of our master, and nothing will ever go wrong if we do so. We do not need any other teachers. Our master is our teacher. Yes, as we heard, things 100 years ago do not always correspond to today. But the words of our master, which were given 100 years ago, do correspond more than ever to our world today. And they will correspond to the world in 100 years from now, and perhaps 1,000 years. So the words of Hazrat Anas Khan will never be outdated, and we do not need any extra teachings. Those teachings are our purpose in life. I mean, to perpetuate those teachings is our purpose in life. And the more we can understand this, the closer we will come to the Master. That is the only way to become close to the Master. Not by pretending to be spiritual. What does it mean to be spiritual? What does it mean? The more we pretend to be spiritual, the less spiritual we are. As soon as we say, I am spiritual, that means nothing else than I am an ego tripper. Those who talk about spirituality, they don't know what they're talking about. Because if we ask them, will you define that word? Nobody can define it. What is spirituality? Who can write about it? Who can talk about it? One can only feel it. One can only feel the radiance. If spirituality could be understood in any way at all, it is radiance. It's not words. Radiance. But radiance cannot be understood either through the mind. It can only be felt in the heart. So perhaps the only way I can close this talk, I don't want to go forever, to talk forever, but I have a lot of more things to say. The only way to perhaps make the first step on the road that leads somewhere, as our master said somewhere, the first step is politeness. The first step of spirituality is politeness. Are we always polite with each other? The second step is humility. Are we always humble? Are we? Who of us is really humble? The next step is modesty, not to pretend. Modesty means to be ashamed of being the possessor of the temple of God within the heart. And that is the meaning of the Sufi emblem, which is a heart with wings. And what are these wings for? Flying above the ego, flying above the self, flying above the want to be spiritual. Wanting to be spiritual will never lead us anywhere to that goal. Modesty. Today, again, the birthday of our master. It was always celebrated in Suren with such great joy. Why are you all looking so serious? It's a happy day today. It's not a serious day. It's not Vissalat day. It is the birthday of our master. Somebody said to me something that, well, first of all, I had a shock. And secondly, then when I on an afterthought, I said, oh, he has really understood what today really is. That person came to me and said, Hidayat, happy Christmas. Do you understand the subtlety of this? It meant everything to me. And I wish it would mean everything to you. The birthday of a master should be, yes, happy Christmas. Happy Sufi message. On that day, perhaps at least 100 people, perhaps, came from so many different countries. In those days, there were no planes, you know. There was only trains. And it took more than 12 hours or more, I think 14 hours, to go by train from The Hague to Paris. And when you got there, you were all black. The suit of the locomotive, the smoke, one was all black. And what you don't realize, I'm talking again about 100 years ago, one had to have, the Dutch people had to have a Belgium visa and a French visa to come to Paris. So you had to go to the Belgium embassy and the French embassy to get a visa to go to Paris. If you look at the passport of our master, which is in the museum, you will see all those visas, Belgium, Holland, Germany, everywhere a visa. So can you imagine what our master went through to do all this traveling by train? Hours and hours sitting in the smoke. Hours and hours at all these stupid embassies. But he did it. What a courage. And sitting in the train, he was constantly thinking of the many sayings that came in the books. And many of his trips were done in company with Sakar von Storck. And Sakar von Storck took down the notes while my father was dictating them. That's how many of the books came, not all of them, no, but many sayings came in that way, in the train, in the smoke, 100 years ago. So then in that hall where all these Dutch people, mostly Dutch people came, because for the Americans, there was no plane. They had to take a ship. I don't know how many days it took, that ship. So of course Americans didn't come. Well, one of them did, Mushda Rabia. Um, all the Murids who came on that day, they all brought yellow roses, and the whole hall was decorated with yellow roses. Our master was very fond of yellow roses. And for those who came there, it was such a privilege to say to the master, "Oh, all my best wishes." But what were their good wishes for the master? He had the guidance from above, but of course the good wishes of the Murids, emphasize the link between the master and the Murids. Am I still talking loud enough?
Yes.
And at that occasion, that is where the Murids felt not only the spiritual radiance of the master, but they also appreciated so much his fatherly and brotherly attention. They felt in him a father, a brother, a person to whom one could really talk to and whose understanding was consoling and inspiring. Everybody was happy, and there could never be a better example of happiness than what was experienced on that day. And what is more, the national representatives had that great privilege of coming up on the stage and telling about the work they had accomplished in their countries. That's where the reports of the national representatives were given on Velada Day. And then, of course, the master communicated such tremendous gratitude for the little bit of work that was accomplished. It was for him a tremendous accomplishment. What, of course, breaks my heart at my age is those 100 people who were there are no more on earth. They've all gone. But they left something. What they left is an energy. And that energy is helping us all to continue. And if there is a miracle at all in the Sufi movement, it is that it has survived 100 years after the passing. And why has it survived? Because of that energy which is still there. And that is why I'm talking about it, because it's so important for you to communicate in your heart with that energy which was built up on Velada Day, the birthday of our master in Suren over 100 years ago. Thank you for your attention.
We shall now hear the voice of Hazrat Inayat Khan in the speech and in the song Asif. And Asif was a name for the Nizam of Hyderabad.
Beloved one of God, Sufi masses, humanity. It is not a message of the East, but it is the message of the soul, the spirit. The Sufi word means wisdom, which comes from the root Sophia. It is the work of that wisdom to give the message today to humanity in order that people may come together in a better understanding, arising beyond the different sections of caste and creed which divide mankind. The Sufi message is an answer to the cry of humanity today. At this moment, when materialism is all prevailing and commercialism is continually on the increase, the Sufi message respects all religions, recognizes all scriptures, regards all the prophets held in esteem by large sections of humanity, and sees the source and goal of all his wisdom in one.
Well, friends.